Good morning, Reanimated fans, or afternoon, or whenever you're listening to this. I'm H.A. Conrad, coming to you from Brooklyn. Here on the West Coast, or there on the West Coast, is my intrepid co-host, Stuart Tiffin. Hello, Stuart.
Good day.
Good day. So, we're on opposite coasts, and usually you're the one with the earthquakes, but apparently we had one yesterday in New York that I didn't feel.
End times.
Yeah, well, I mean, with that and the eclipse, I think people are drawing some conclusions on the interwebs, at least.
Freaking Rudy Giuliani, not just some people. Like, but not to mention that the epicenter was underneath a Donald Trump-owned golf course. But hey, let's not read too much into it, right, Rudy?
No, let's not read anything into that at all. But anyway, let's just say New Yorkers are just ill-equipped to deal with earthquakes. It just was apparently mayhem. I was ensconced in a building that is apparently on earthquake plate, so did not feel a thing. So I was just in the dark about it all until, you know, the phone started ringing and people started, you know, telling me about it.
I was in text chains with a bunch of New Yorkers and New Jersey people yesterday, and they're all like, oh my God, everything was shaking. It was crazy. And I'm like, hey, Conrad, how you doing? You must be pretty high up there in your office. You're like, what earthquake?
I know pretty much. But Bill definitely felt it in Brooklyn. It was pretty, apparently the building was pretty much rocking and rolling for a bit. And then a friend of mine who's in New Jersey, so apparently like closer to it, but she thought that her washing machine was off kilter.
God, mine is.
Causing it. So anyway, so just varying reactions to it.
I mean, if you have an off kilter washing machine on spin cycle, it can feel like it's shaking your whole house. So,
but anyway, you know, we're here. I don't think there's been any more aftershocks today, but apparently earthquakes on the East Coast are a slightly different thing because the way that the type of rock transmits the vibrations a lot more strongly, and so it goes further, and that's why when it happened in 2011, which is the last time we had an earthquake of any magnitude, but that was down in Virginia, and that was a 5.8, and we definitely felt it. Like, I felt that one in New York, but again, was in a different building at that time, so I guess it all depends on where you were. I have to say, I'm really happy I didn't feel it in my building, but like, it was a little disconcerting to know that something like that happened and I was completely unaware.
I would say that's great architecture and great engineering. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. You win. I lived in a building with geopiers, which are specifically designed to like withstand earthquakes here in California. And even on the third floor, you would still feel like I was woken up when Napa had its 5 point whatever in 2014. And it was very noticeable. So I would much rather take not feeling it a couple, you know, however many floors up in the air you were, because I could imagine that would be really disconcerting otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, and we got obviously an email from the building saying, oh, no, this is why many people didn't feel it and whatever. And apparently the reason why is that it was built so that in that way, because of the subways that run underneath, and they don't want people to feel the vibrations for that. So it wasn't about earthquakes. Incidental stuff. So anyway, so that's good to know about the building I work in. But all is well, and so far so good, but I guess we'll see if anything else. I will say I am very, very happy I was not in a subway at the time that happened, because I think that would have been pretty freaky. So
yeah, but between idiots, elected officials and otherwise on the internet saying that eclipses and earthquakes signify the end times, and it's, oh, it happens to be on the coasts. Okay, thank you for that. There is also a lot of news out there, and we haven't put any of this in our show notes, HA, but I figured it's worth a quick mention that cicada apocalypse is coming, I think mostly to the Midwest, where cicadas tend to be a big deal, because there's two batches being born at the same time.
Yes, so this is the overlap batch. So
they're expecting just a ton. I'm going to be there in June in Chicago, so I'll report back. I'm sure, you know, if I take some audio, you won't be able to hear me talk. It'll just be the sound of cicadas. But there's a bunch of articles out there right now about how, you know, as you will with insect stuff, they're like, oh, and of course, there's an STD or something with cicadas that turns them into zombies. You know, the usual the usual thing. But it does we are feeling a bit apocalyptic between bugs, earthquakes, eclipses.
But humans are really good at, finding patterns and
I mean,
everything.
humans are the ultimate end time generator. So otherwise, we have a couple of trailers that have dropped in the past week,
Yeah.
and not like way in advance of the projects that they are announcing
I have
is.
to admit to you, I was unaware of this, which is kind of weird that it wouldn't have popped up given my watching and reading sort of
Yeah,
habits.
you are a
But
Neil. What is a Neil Gaimanite? Do you have
Gaiman.
a? God damn it! I always say it wrong.
Gaiman.
Yeah. So
But
what is the name for a collection of Gaiman fans?
I don't know. But in any case, there is the Dead Boy Detective Agency, which is adapted from I think it's like a DC graphic novel. I'll admit, I feel like I've read one of these. I don't know that I followed this particular franchise. But apparently this is coming out on April 25th. There's a whole trailer. But I wasn't even aware that this was a thing.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. I mean, I watch American Gods, all that stuff. Lucifer, all of his stuff. I'm Good Omens. I'm all into it. So it's weird that this did not pop up on my radar or any of the things that I normally would see. So I'll admit that that part worries me a little
Huh.
bit.
Well, what should worry us more? I mean, the trailer looks interesting. It looks like an interesting story, Monster of the Week type show, if
Yeah,
I
it's
can.
definitely that.
Yeah. But what's curious about this is like, why is Netflix even trying with this again? It does feel like so many of their shuttered other projects, like what's that Lockwood and Company? It kind of has, I don't know, it probably is a completely different story from that. But to me, just not having watched that trailer and this trailer, I'm like, these feel related. And so with their, habit of like just canceling shows lately. I'm like, why would you go back to the well and do another one of these?
Yeah, so I don't know. But these are sort of spin-off characters from the Sandman series, and so they're the main characters for this are two children, Charles Roland and Edwin Payne, and they didn't want to enter the afterlife, so they basically stay in the real world to in be like ghost detectives investigating like supernatural stuff, like those kinds of crimes. This is a Vertigo comic, so this is kind of like and then they ended up being popular enough that they were their own thing, and but I'm pretty sure that that wasn't written by Neil Gaiman. I think he just sort of manifested them, and other people have taken over, and then they'll appear as like cameos and different things. So this isn't something that I followed super closely. It's pretty dark, their backstories. If memory serves, I think Edwin was like murdered at like a prep school or something, and then and I don't remember how the other guy died. But this is sort of all in the theme of sort of like macabre supernatural deaths or something. Like I'm pretty sure like hell is involved somehow, as many things are in Neil
Well,
Gaiman's
from the
comic
trailer,
franchise.
they're trying to avoid being taken to the afterlife, while helping solve other people's unsolved murders or deaths. It's not an uninteresting conceit. And then they have like a psychic and some other person helping them. And apparently there are zombies who are going to show up in here too. So I think it's worth a watch. We will probably check it out and report back.
Yeah, but I will say this is, because it was part of Sandman, one of the fa my favorites and fan favorites in Sandman is the character of Death, and so she makes an appearance in this particular.
Yeah, not the same actor though, I don't think.
I don't think so. Well, I mean, that's a thing that they're kind of doing and playing with the Sandman series in general, is that they can manifest in different appearances and things like that. There was a lot of uproar about that actually with Sandman because Death is quite a beloved figure. I'm definitely a little bit more like, I kind of feel like this franchise, especially like the Sandman and this kind of thing, part of the beauty of it is that you can reimagine it in so many different ways. Like these are kind of supernatural beings, so like why not? And they did this a little bit with American Gods too. But I think you can just be really creative in how you choose to interpret it all. So I think that that's kind of fun. So I'll bite and I'll watch this. Yeah, I agree with you. It looks like a regurgitation, but I'm an easy
It
mark
just,
in
I'm
game.
not even, trying to suggest that it looks, well, because I didn't watch Lockwood and Company, but it just
It
has the
wasn't.
same feeling of like young adult featuring, or it's like targeted at young adults. It's creepy, horror, thrilling, solving puzzles and mysteries. And it has like a similar dark aesthetic. It feels from a very surface level. Like
Well,
it looks
I
like
would
Lockwood
say,
and Company, it looks like Shadow and Bone, it looks like to at least two shows that Netflix has decided to cancel in the last 12 months. And so I'm just
right.
like, well, this
I
feels
mean,
weird.
it's hard not having watched this yet. But it is darker if they choose to go in that route, a lot darker than Lockwood and Co. And the targeted audience for those graphic novels are not kids, so maybe it's a little bit more serious. I don't know, but I would also say that part of why I love Lockwood and Co. is that I felt like it was maybe a little bit based in this, and you know, I like a good monster of the week, a little Buffy kind of action, that kind of thing. So, you know, this is all fine for me. I'll watch it. If you don't want to watch it, that's cool. But
No, I
I
that's
think
not
I'm gonna
I'm
pick
not
you.
yeah, that's not what I'm getting at.
I know, I agree.
I'm just banging that drum about how I don't understand who makes decisions at Netflix and why they make them.
Well, so I think, I mean, looking at when this started filming, I mean, it started filming in like 2022. So a little bit overlapping with the whole, like, I think that they just like basically cleared a bunch of things, and for whatever reason, this has been a little longer in production. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe they ran into hiccups. Who knows? But I also think Netflix has a track record of basically having a lot of similarly themed things, and they just want to see what sticks. So that's kind of the, I think that's what it is. I think we're going to see less and less of that as we've seen. They've like cut their budgets and cut the shows that they're deciding to invest in. But we'll have to see what happens with this. But anyway, I'll watch it. I'm excited. This feels like a little like gift, but again, I'm a little worried that I only found out about it now. It feels a little odd, and some of the delays make me wonder if something else was going on with the production. So we'll have to see. Next
Indeed.
up.
Next up, we've got an homage, and inspired by George A. Romero's Night of the
Yeah.
Living Dead, comes Festival of the Dead, which is already out
Festival
on
of the Living Dead.
Festival of the Living
Living
Dead?
Dead,
Of the
yes.
Living Dead. And it's on Tubi.
Tubi.
It's a Tubi original, and it came out on April 5th, so it's available to be watched.
How are you doing today? I mean, we got Gaiman, we've got Tubby. Like, are you like misfiring there? Are you
What are
all
you
right?
talking about? These are easily mistakable words.
Cool.
So I'm fine.
All right.
Watch it on Tubi, Festival of the
Living Dead.
Living Dead. Just putting that
I
in there.
think the eclipse is affecting you. Maybe
It's,
it's the cigarette.
the moon's gravity is pulling on my last remaining brain cells. But yeah, so honestly, when I first read this, I was like, wait. Tubi has originals now. Like I thought people were getting out of the business of doing originals, and this organization is like, no, let's do one, and it's going to be Night of the Festival of the Living Dead. At first I was like, oh, this is going to be really, really bad. But then the trailer is not really, really bad. So I
It's
don't
not, and it's like tangentially attached. I mean, the main characters are supposed to be Ben's grandchildren 55 years later, after the whole the Night of the Living Dead. So it looks pretty good. And it stars Ashley Moore and Cameron Bickendova. I feel like he was maybe in Gotham. I don't know what she was in. But you know, it's
And
gonna be.
it's directed by the Soska sisters, who have apparently quite a bit of cachet to their name, Jen and Sylvia, also known as the Twisted Twins, Canadian film directors, producers, and screenwriters. And they've done things such as Dead Hooker in a Trunk, American Mary,
Ooh.
things like this. On the Edge, Rabbit, Rabid. Nothing that I've honestly am familiar
Did
with.
you just say Raven?
It's British. That's how they say it in the UK.
Do they really?
Maybe not. I'm not sure. They might not say that anywhere. Rabies, rabid.
I've heard it both ways.
Yeah.
I do think that the premise of this is kind of funny, but basically, they go and the two main characters, which by the way are named Ash, huh? And that's like, come on, that homage and
I
whatever.
think it's like an ensemble, not just. Do you
No,
feel like
but
it's like more than just a boyfriend and girlfriend at the center of this? Or maybe it
it
is.
is,
Even in
but
the trailer, it feels like new characters are constantly showing up. And I'm just like,
yeah, like it's
oh,
fun.
you're in this too? Okay.
It's a little bit of an ensemble. So there's like a group of friends that go, and it's like a kind of a nostalgic thing, and they go to a film festival or something called Festival of the Living Dead or something called Festival of the Living Dead. And while they're there, the festival is disrupted because there's a blast of radioactive space dust, and they have to defend themselves against the living dead.
Makes
So
sense.
it's a ridiculous premise, but I kind of love it. And so I'm probably going to be all right watching this. The trailer actually looks decent.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The production value is not horrible. It's a matter of whether or not the story can hold up because I'm sure it's not super well funded, or maybe it is because Tubi is suddenly a powerhouse of content production, maybe.
They do a lot of horror. So
Interesting.
they've been buying a lot of things, funding a lot of things. So we'll have to see.
There you go.
And then next up, you saw this thing in Screambox, which I've subscribed to from time to time, and they have some good stuff in there. So
Oh.
definitely happy to check this out.
Yeah, this was more of a note for us to maybe, that's why I put it in parentheses.
Oh, sorry. I think we should still talk about it though, because, I think that they put a lot of stuff in there that we don't necessarily pay attention to. So
That's true. That's true. They
thanks for
have
adding more parentheses in there as we speak. That was nice.
lots of parentheses. I don't know where they publish their list of what's coming out in April. I kind of wish I could get a hold of that too. But a couple of news websites picked this up, where they were basically like, "Oh yeah, Screambox in April is going to have these several new films, or not maybe not new films, but featured films in their lineup, including The Reanimator." No, sorry. The guy who made Reanimator is coming with King of the Ants in April, starring George Wendt. Wow, doing horror. That's kind of scary. I don't want to see George Wendt in a horror film.
I don't know that I want to see that, but
George
cool.
Wendt is a lovable guy. I don't want to see him in the. Oh, but LeVar Burton is doing also Rise of the Zombies.
That I'm all
So
right
that's from 2012. I don't know if we've seen that. Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies. Wasn't there Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter or werewolf hunter?
with. I think it's, yeah, it was Vampire Hunter.
So I'm wondering what this is. But that's out on April 12. So yeah, there's some, they're coming out with some stuff that we might have to check out on Screambox in April, and that was what that was about.
All right, well, now on to our review slash summary recap of the week, which we both watched Lisa Frankenstein, which came out this year. And this is a comedy horror directed by Zelda Williams, who is Robin Williams' daughter. And it was written by Diablo Cody.
And produced.
And, pardon?
And produced.
And produced. And according to Diablo Cody, this is in the same universe as another horror film that they did,
Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body, which I don't, I feel like we, did we review that? I don't think we did.
Is that a zombie film?
It's more of a demonic possession film, I guess. So maybe we didn't, but it is interesting. And I didn't know this going into it. I'd found that out later, but I thought that was kind of interesting. The film stars Catherine Newton and Cole Sprouse, and a few other people, including Carla Gugino, who you may remember from Watchmen and a few other things.
Yeah.
Cole Sprouse is from Riverdale. He plays Jughead, and he's the sort of creature in this. And Catherine Newton is she was in a lot of, she's been in like a lot of television shows and things like that. I think probably best known for like Big Little Lies, but she was always also in Ant-Man as
Ant-Man.
yeah, she's Cassie.
Who's that?
I think she's the daughter.
Cassie Lang. Wow. Interesting.
So anyway, she's also in a very like weird, she was in a very weird movie, which I definitely caught a little bit of this with Vince Vaughn called Freaky, where it's like kind of like Freaky Friday, where I think she switches bodies with a mass murderer or like a
Yeah.
something like that.
I've
Did
seen
you
those
see it?
trailers, but no, I've never seen the film.
I'll admit I started to I caught part of it and I'm like, oh, I don't need to watch this. And I just kept going. But she's been in like a ton of TV shows and things like that. And so anyway, so a pretty decent cast that I thought was and pretty well cast and good actors. And so the main character is Lisa Swallows, and she is I feel like the feel of this is very like a, I don't want to say like a parody, but it has like that kind of stylized world. It felt a little bit like Edward Scissorhands to me.
Well,
Or
not at least because Dylan Sprouse is basically doing an Edward Scissorhands
yes, he
impression.
is. But Cole Sprouse. But
What did I call him? Edward Sprouse?
you called him Edward Strauss or
Or
something.
Dylan Sprouse is a guy I've seen. I don't know if they're related, but there's a guy called Dylan Sprouse who does D&D games that I've seen online.
But in any case, yeah, he's doing a little bit of, like his movements and things like that look a little Edward Scissorhands. But I'm talking more about how the world is stylized. Like it's very much like an 80s style, but very sort of like really vibrant colors, like saturated colors. And definitely even the sort of tone of the whole thing has this like very stylized and weird feel. Like a weird little 80s universe. I
Yeah.
also have to say the soundtrack is really good and they spent a lot of money on it. But
Soundtrack is good. The costuming is really good. I really liked a lot of what they put Lisa Swallows in,
yes,
especially
me
as
too.
the episode goes on.
Yes,
She
it's awesome.
yeah.
I also like what they put him into, like what she decides to dress him up in. He's got like that very 80s look and he wears a bunch of band t-shirts, which is fun.
At one point, he's wearing a nightgown that my daughter owns. He must be wearing the adult size of it. It's like a Hannah Anderson style. I'm pretty sure it's Hannah Anderson, like Swedish or Norwegian, Scandinavian style nightgown. It's very fetching.
The premise of this film centers around Lisa, who is the main character, and she is, you know, we get introduced to her and she's like kind of getting ready for a party, which we find out. I don't know if you found this, but I was kind of having a hard time placing like are they roommates? It's I guess her stepsisters, we figure it out, but we don't really get a ton of information other than these two are getting ready together, and then we learn a lot more as the story goes on. But it's these two stepsisters getting ready to go to a party. And what I liked a lot about this is that her stepsister is supposed to be this like popular cheerleader. And normally in a like horror film like this, that would be somebody painted sort of as like the bully or mean girl. But that's not what they do here. She's trying to be supportive in her own kind of like weird way. It's a little bit like the Elphaba Glinda relationship in Wicked, where like Glinda's trying to make Elphaba popular, and it's actually a very similar dynamic. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah, with only a one or two exceptions, Taffy is who's played by Liza Soberano, is really kind to Lisa, but it's also kind of kindness with an underline of disapproval almost always. So that, you know, even though I think one of the takeaways we're supposed to have is that Taffy is a source of positivity in this film, like my inner bullshit detector is like, nah. I mean, yeah, she's saying nice things, but it's almost always because she's judging you.
I don't know that she's judging. I think that she just doesn't understand her.
It's
So
not even just Lisa though, because she also, as soon as they get to that party, she's like, "Oh, Susie or whatever. Oh, you finally cut your bangs. I wasn't going to say anything, but they looked horrible."
yeah,
She's
no, she's
like,
not.
this is the kind of thing that she's, and she's giving that kind of stuff to Lisa all the time. And Lisa internalizes it a lot, is constantly referring to, well, Taffy always says this and that. And so
Fair.
it's kind of like a pretty toxic source of advice, I think, overall. Like, if you're gonna break down the Taffy character, who could you could come away from this film and just be like, Taffy's pretty great. She makes a mistake
Oh,
in the she pr makes a mistake in the film, but she's basically stand up and a solid person. But
I wouldn't say that she's like completely stand up, but I think she's like the ways that she doesn't stand up is sort of the quintessential problem with most teenagers because they, you know, I don't know. It's but they could have made her the real sort of, I don't want to say mustache twirly, but that they could have made her that sort of like ultimate mean girl. I guess she's a little bit more
There's a
passive.
few other contenders
Mean girl.
for that prize in this
Yeah.
film. Yeah, she's not, this is, it's interesting in that she is not mean, she is not nice, she is, I wouldn't call her multifaceted or multidimensional either, but she's at least a little bit more complicated than at first you think.
True. And then we have like, I do want to say like the opening credits, like the illustrations that they have, and they do this a couple of times in the film, are pretty cool. So I like the opening sort of like title sequence. And they have sort of like the whole party scene. There's almost like a dreamlike quality to it. There's a lot of like very there's moments in this, and I think that this is the one thing that I do like those storytelling can be a little bit uneven in terms of like how like deciding what it wants to be to some extent. So we do know that Lisa is this kind of gothy kid that hangs out in cemeteries, and we've part of why she does this, as we discover the party, is like her mother was killed by an axe murderer and she was hidden in the closet. And I will say this, like Taffy makes this one comment, she goes, and oh, and when Lisa came out, it was too late and her mother was dead. Well, Lisa would have died if she had come out. So it was sort of, there was a little judgment there. And I did think that they were going to do some payoff with the axe murderer at some point.
Oh, you and me both, man. This is, yeah, I'm trying not to come out too hard on this movie, but there's like a ton of stuff that is like half baked here,
Yeah.
or that's just, it just doesn't deliver on the promise of the genre that it's kind of in. Not delivering on the axe murder is like just one of those, but it is like a huge missing link, even to the very end. You're just like, what about the axe murderer? What happened there?
Right. But the one thing that this movie does, and Diablo Cody often does this with certain things, you know, Juno, we saw a bit of this and whatever, but you know, like certain characters are who normally the sort of like trope of those characters, and I think they play a little bit with Taffy on that front. They also play a little bit with Lisa on this front, and certainly they do it with the her lab partner in this, and the and I don't remember the name of the other teenager who's like kind of a mean girl, but is almost like a nerdy gothy mean girl.
Oh, Tamara, I think.
Tamara. So, you know, we see Lisa, she's the odd person out. She's had a lot of problems. She just feels incredibly socially awkward. She's a big crush on the guy who's the editor of the school paper. And you know, I do think that this actor is really great who plays Lisa, and it's really, there's really like just sort of like, I don't want to say cringy, but oh, that's just like so hard. She's like trying so hard to like connect with this guy that she has a big crush on, and then, you know, trying to be like the cool kid, drinks down this like spiked drink that apparently has like PCP or something crazy in it, and she starts to like hallucinate, and this other guy who is her lab partner takes advantage of her. And it's, you know, normally his character would be kind of the hero and basically, you know, oh, I understand the character, and you would make the popular kids the bad guys. And so there's a lot of like challenges to certain tropes in this, I would say.
I
And
guess, yeah, that's a good point. but it's not like it's flipping it on its head so
No,
much as there are no good guys.
well, that's my point. They're making everything has a lot of layers, and there's gray areas in all these characters. Nobody's sort of like a white knight in this.
No, there's no even Lisa. Lisa's not a good guy.
No.
Her dad is like a weird version. I don't even know. That's the same guy who plays Rusty's dad or Dusty, whoever the Stranger Things. He's the dad in the armchair with the hot wife.
Yep.
He's playing another 80s dad in this. Joe Crest or Trest or however you say his name.
Think it's Crest, but I don't know.
It's bizarre to have him in this role too, when he plays like the same freaking role in Stranger Things. But he's like Lisa's actual dad who remarried 6 months after his wife was killed by an axe murderer, and then is really attentive to his stepdaughter. There's a weird line later in the film where Taffy's like, have you noticed how your dad's always so concerned about me? When are you coming home, Taffy? What are you gonna do? What are you gonna be there? And he's always, but they don't take it to a gross place. I know I'm just rambling, but I'm also getting to the point that they don't develop his character very much. He's very neutral. He doesn't seem to be affected by the fact that his wife was murdered and his new wife was murdered by the end of the film. He's just like, let's go to Fuddruckers with no emotional response whatsoever. And that's just a really weird way to write a character.
And I kept waiting for something to happen with him because he was so flat and strange, and
Yeah.
they didn't take it to a creepy place with Taffy. But we also don't really see him interacting with Lisa in the way he does with Taffy.
And I'm just pointing to his character, the way he's written throughout this movie, as an example of how a lot of the characters are kind of written in a very flat
Right.
way in this film, maybe with the exception of Taffy, who has at least some
Right.
contours to her.
He does.
It's just very strange. And I'm thinking of like almost every other character in this film, and I'm having a hard time coming up with any, like we've said, nobody is like actually nice. Her boss at her sewing job is really casually cruel to her. Michael Trent, the guy she has a crush on, is it Mike Trent?
Yeah, something like that. I thought his name was Trent. I don't know. I don't
Is it
remember.
Trent Michaels?
It's
He's also he's nice to her face, but then does something kind of unforgivable and is not very kind. Yes, no good guys. The Marcus, the lab
Michael Trent.
partner, Michael Trent, the lab partner guy.
Doug.
Doug, at first you're like he could be a ducky. He's gonna just take her to like, recover from being high as hell. And then yeah, just like he says something that she's like, oh, my mom used to say that. And then he has his hand on her boob, and you're just like, dude. She at
Yeah.
least gets to get away from that scenario. It doesn't progress much further than that, but it's horrible. And then she goes home and breaks a mirror. And the next thing you know, well, actually, no, she goes home. On the way home, she stops at the cemetery and makes the deal with the lightning going green and stuff. And she says, I wish I was with you, to her favorite gravestone.
Gravestone. So, yeah, and I think that there's a lot of things to like about this. Like the production value was great. I do think some of the writing was great and the acting was great, but I feel like the storytelling was just uneven. And what we're talking about in terms of like the dad character, I thought that there was going to be a payoff there. Honestly, I thought that it was going to turn out that he had murdered the mother.
Yes, something like maybe they're like enjoying the fact that they're not going to tell you who the ex-murderer was. Was it the dad? It
Yeah.
could be. Like he remarries within 6 months
Yeah.
to
And then the
Carlo
wife
Gugino.
marries is like, I don't know. It's so there's just a very like so that those pieces I don't love. The things that I do love is that like the interactions between the creature and Lisa are pretty amazing. Their whole interaction, there's like a lot of and given the fact that Cole Sprouse doesn't actually get to really speak as this creature until the very, very end, is kind of interesting. Like they do a lot of great physical acting. She is really great at playing off of him. So I like the evolution of their relationship during this. I know it's kind of disgusting, but I do like the fact that they keep addressing the fact that this is actually like a zombie and he smells terrible and he's got like bugs falling off of him here and there. I know it's gross, but it's like they didn't go the way of the like say the other zombies that we have seen where they pretend like the zombies are actually like okay, you know.
She is completely repelled by him until the end of the movie, and I think that that's smart and good. The fact that anytime he cries, she actually like gags and wants and like almost throws up and is like, "Oh my God, you're freaking disgusting!" Like she, so it, that's like kind of, you know, that's smart and funny, but it also is like, why did you keep him around when he just showed up at your house? Like, why did you risk getting into so much trouble with, well, I forget what her stepmom's name is, instead of just being like, yeah, this thing broke into the house.
Her mom's name is Janet. Her stepmom's name
Oh,
is
damn it, Janet. That's right.
Janet.
Yeah. So
Well,
why?
so the thing is, when she realizes who she is, she's been leaving like things for him, offerings for him at his grave. Like, so I think that even though he is gross to her, she feels obligated to him, and they can also do a fabulous makeover scene for him. I do love the whole thing where she's like giving him. Giving him the soap to be in the shower. And then they have to like, you know, get him dressed up. That was pretty amazing. And then, you know, he there is the sort of the fact that she works as like in this like repair shops and she knows how to sew and all that stuff. And then that is leading to the whole thing where she's replacing his body parts by selling them on to him. Come on, these scenes are like really fun and ridiculous, but I thought that that was like a little like a nice touch. The fact that the absurd piece of this, which is that her way of bringing his body parts back to life is through a tanning bed that's off, is pretty awesome. It just the absurdity of it is amazing. And it does bring back like I don't know if you ever watched any of like Edward Scissorhands is a little later, but like that sort of cheesy 80s like film. Apparently, like her name is an homage to like Weird Science, which I didn't catch while I was watching it, but the Kelly LeBrock character in Weird Science is named Lisa, and so I guess that's what Diablo Cody named Lisa Frankenstein after. And that's what it kind of felt like was that absurdist thing. I mean, that was even it like r more ridiculous, that particular film. And I felt like this is definitely kind of pulling from that and like Edward Scissorhands. There's a darkness to it because nobody is really the good guy ultimately, though I guess you kind of have a happy ending ish for the creature and for her. But you know, they do some really bad things, like all throughout
That's
the film.
yeah. They're doing bad things for no real good reason. Like the people that they murder in this, none of them deserve to be murdered. Even though Janet is threatening to send her to institutionalize her, and her dad isn't really going to do anything about it. Nobody deserves to be murdered here. Not even Doug, the guy who put his hand on her boob. And you know, not Michael Trent, or the police officer, assuming that they killed that police officer. I'm not sure if they could have. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of murders happening, and then a suicide. Like if you kind of like zoom out from this movie and don't look at the relationships in quotes that are being developed here, it's just a bunch of unnecessary killings followed by a suicide. And that's a pretty bleak freaking story.
It is pretty bleak. Like, there's nothing that's like really triumphant about this.
No.
Or, you know, you don't really see her character develop anything other beyond like she's kind of damaged and just gets a little bit more and more damaged, although I suppose she gets more empowered as this goes on. It in some way, but overall,
Yeah.
it's a pretty bleak story for the most part.
Through her wardrobe, she gets empowered, like mostly from, but it's all Taffy's clothing. that she's wearing, but it's like because the creature told her to wear it.
Yeah.
That's the source of her empowerment. So yeah, that's kind of odd too. Like she, nothing really changes about her except for the fact that she puts on different clothing. But she gets more confident. And she follows the she recites and follows the advice that Taffy has been giving her, but now feels like she has a confidant in the form of the creature, because she was apparently mute after her mother died and didn't talk, and now she even mentions in one of her monologues to him, like, I don't usually talk this much. I've never said this much, not in years, because I had mutism or some, thing. And somehow this is like transforming her character. And I guess you could see how that could happen if you just were in therapy, but your therapist was a zombie.
Yeah,
Maybe.
maybe.
I don't know. But I do think she looks stunning in every outfit that Lisa puts on, and like these consecutive days that she's going to school. She looks incredible.
She looks a lot like she looks a lot like Lydia from Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
You like that is the sort of stylistic thing that it feels like they're going for here, especially the sort of last outfit with her little like the tulle skirt and everything like that, which it is really funny because Taffy was like, "That's my Miss Halloween costume pageant," or something like weird. It was just kind of it was really funny because you can't actually imagine Taffy wearing any of these things.
No, it does not compute.
No.
Yeah, and honestly, like the one time I smiled or almost laughed, maybe laughed in this film during this film was when she's called into the principal's office, and she has affected this really strange walk when she walks in there. I haven't noticed it until this scene,
Yeah, it's really weird.
but then the cop or the campus cop maybe or the actual cop is like, yeah, somebody said they saw you out by, in Papoosa Lake, Papoose Lake. Weird walk, thick ankles, and there's a lot, there's some looks, and that was the one time I laughed during this film. So I don't know if you were cracking up during other things. Maybe it sounds like you really enjoyed the clothing montage. I for whatever reason, that just didn't really do it for me. But there was just, to me, not enough comedy to make this bleak ass storyline work for me, if that makes sense.
They do a REO Speedwagon homage, which I thought was hilarious, and then they bring it back later. It's great. I think, but it's too uneven. I feel like you have to either go to the completely absurd, and I feel like they tried to walk the line a little bit too much. This also, I mean, again, they're pulling from so many different things for this particular show. I mean, the Damn It, Janet is certainly Rocky Horror based, and that there's some definite feels from that, and also there's also feels from like Heathers, right? There's a lot of different things that they are, it does feel like they're kind of pointing to
Yeah, it's too nostalgic and not enough
enough of its own thing,
of
yeah.
its own thing. Yeah, like I kind of wish that it had not been an 80s period piece and had just been set today. Would have
Right.
been preferable to me, because I've seen versions of this film and this story before from the 80s, like from movies that were set in and made in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And so they have an authenticity to them that this film cannot possibly have. And I don't know why they chose to set it in the 80s. For, again, maybe nostalgia solely, or to get around some sort of cell phone plot gimmick.
Maybe.
But it just doesn't work when I'm looking at this and I'm seeing, like, oh yeah, that's Edward Scissorhands. That's Untamed Heart with Marissa Tomei and Christian Slater. Do
Oh,
you remember that
yeah.
movie where he had a gorilla heart or something?
Yeah, it was a monkey heart or
Yeah,
something.
monkey. But that was not a bad
Baboon?
film.
Was
Like
it
it
a
took its it
baboon
might have been,
heart?
I don't know, some sort of
Weird.
ape. It
One
that
of the
movie.
best lines. One of the best lines in that whole movie. She's like, "You think you have a heart of a monkey or something like that?"
That movie took itself very seriously,
It did, but
but
there's
it kind of
so.
worked because of that. And this movie doesn't take itself seriously. It doesn't really commit to any one genre or anything, even characters like Lisa's dad are not. What is he? What is that character?
I
Like
don't know.
just like an
You're waiting.
emotionally, what am I?
You're waiting for the other shoe to drop with him, and it never does.
Yeah, it's really confusing. At least Carla Gugino's character of Janet, she's the mustache twirly, she's
Oh, yeah.
terrible. She's listening to self-help like podcasts before there were podcasts that are just making her worse. You know?
She's wearing the most amazing aerobics outfit.
She is wearing the very amazing outfit and she's eating her diet plate of peaches and whatever the hell that is, and then a worm that the creature
That
hawks
Edward
up.
Scissorhands puts in.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm definitely like this movie doesn't do it for me because it doesn't commit. Other than on a very bleak storyline, which I find really difficult to sympathize with, where they're just like murdering the creature, wades in and murders three people, with Lisa not, she's only really a willing participant of Doug's murder, I think. Everybody else, she's kind of a bystander.
Yep. And which is weird because she kind of says something about the reason why she decided to participate in Doug's murder is that the murder of Janet felt so good, which I thought was weird. And there is an implication of this in this whole thing, and they bring it up in the principal's office that she potentially was the person who killed her mother. So maybe that is potentially true. You don't know. Because it would explain a lot in that maybe she has either repressed memories or something like that, but something is not quite right up
Man,
there.
I wish that we could actually get there in a leap in this film,
I know, but you can't
but you
because,
can't because they don't want to tell you anything. And I don't feel like it's worth the time to really like pick out what woulda, coulda, shouldas here. Even though there's those breadcrumbs, like with her dad, and is he trying to get married to his stepdaughter? Not sure, but maybe. And do we care?
I don't know. I guess I just wanted this to be so much better because there were definitely glimmers of really fun things within it. And I don't, you know, I like, and again, the cast is great. The production was great. I just think it needed maybe a little bit more of a tweak in the storytelling to get it across the finish line in a way that would have been satisfying to me. A lot, even to the end where we, you know, spoiler alert, we see that the creature can now speak, and he has resurrected Lisa Frankenstein, and she's all burned, and they're sort of have a happily ever after.
This could be a cool ending if Lisa Swallows had actually been a real tragic character. If
Right.
she had actually been, she talks about how people bully her, and it's true, people aren't nice to her, including like a lot of people are not nice to her, but she does not go to the level of tragedy that you would need for her to get away with killing three people and then being resurrected after her suicide to be his corpse bride. I feel like you just need to go to a darker place for that to really be the payoff, you know? Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that's just what I kept wanting watching this is like the payoff that never happens. So, I do think it's, you know, as far as something being out there, I think it's kind of fun to watch. You know, I'll admit I spent $20 to watch it. I don't
I
know if
own this now. I own this movie.
Wait, you didn't just you owned it and you
There
bought
was no option to rent it. It
Oh,
was
maybe I do own this. I didn't. I thought I just rented it from Amazon,
I own this.
but I don't. But I'm kind of glad I don't. And anyway, but I am. Look, this is a first directing debut. I don't think it was a bad direction necessarily. I just think probably, and maybe that like most of this to me is like a storytelling issue that needed to be have a little edited to it. I feel like. At least with if we're putting this in the same universe, like as Diablo Cody has said, wait, is it, sorry, I'm so sorry, Lisa's body, what is it called?
Jennifer's body.
Jennifer's body, like that. Even though it was pretty gory and whatever, that had a pretty specific and direct storyline. And I don't, so this felt a little bit diluted to me, like, and not, and passive aggr I don't want to say passive aggressive, but it did. So I'm not sure what was going on here, but
Yeah.
and I had my gripes with Jennifer's body too, but I just thought that it was like an interesting premise, generally. So did you watch it?
I haven't seen it, no.
Like, it's got like some of the same themes, and there's nobody, again, the same idea. Nobody's really a good guy, for the most part. Although there's certainly like vengeance and things like that. It's got this like dark comedy aspect to it. But I just felt like it was a little bit more successful and direct in the storytelling from my point of view. Anyway,
Yeah, I
I'm
mean,
sure it was.
I'm trying to interrogate myself a little bit and be like, well, look, good storytelling is generally when there aren't like black and white alignments, or telling a story about good characters and bad characters is kind of dull in its own right. But I just think that there was too much negativity and not enough light. And the light that I think the movie wanted us to take away was this love story, this burgeoning love story, but it was not earned to me. Like the creature just going around killing anybody who insulted or wronged Lisa was m more reprehensible than something that would have made our heroine, if you want to call her that, fall in love with him. And basically, she's still kind of intent on Michael Trent losing her virginity to him and then being killed probably when she's arrested for the murder of her stepmother and Douglas. Like that's her end game plan. But then when she finds out that, things haven't been like the Taffy's been sleeping with him and the creature steps in and does what he does, she's like, well, let's just sew his penis onto you. We'll have sex, and then that'll be the end. It's an honestly a very strange story.
It's a very strange story. But I don't know. I don't think it's the worst film I've seen. So
No,
I'm not
it's
gonna like give it a hard time
no,
over
no,
that.
no. It's definitely not the worst film I've ever seen. I just wish that it was the story. Yeah, I think it comes down to the writing, I guess, is kind of where it's at. Unless the direction somehow made the plot less followable.
And that's why I'm saying it's a little bit more of a storytelling or a narrative direction, because I did think that the writing and the dialogue was very good. And I thought that the acting was very good, and especially the physical, like, as I said, the creature doesn't, he's not able to say anything.
Do you know
And
he went to mime school for this?
I did not, but he did a great job.
Yeah.
I do think that those things were all really positive. And maybe I'll step away from this and feel a little bit differently. I just definitely wanted some slightly more of a payoff in the end. Definitely the dad bothers me even now as we're talking about it. But that's about it. But I think we're ready to, I don't have much more to say about it. Do you?
No, I think I'm good. I didn't l like it very much. I think I was kind of bored in the first act, and then I was like, what is even happening for the rest of the film?
Yeah, I mean, look, as a former sort of like, I can identify a lot with like the gothiness of this genre and character. And so I guess part of me wanted there to be more interesting things, and it felt like more of a, like, it didn't feel like a very like a fun dive into it. I don't know. It just, I think you're right. There just need to be a little bit more light, a little bit more humor, and possibly more absurdity, I guess. I don't know. But in any case, I would love to know what our listeners think. So if you have thoughts, please send us an email at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. And
Find the rest of our episodes online at reanimated.podbean.com. And then make sure you come back and join us next time on Reanimated. What are we going to be talking about? We don't know. We're going to figure that out and let you know on the day. It'll probably be something about zombies or vampires. Probably.
probably.
So thanks for listening and toodles.
Ciao.